Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Sign away the rest of the morning. We're going till 1 o'clock. Special guests, Michael True, local musician who is suing the city of Santa Cruz and various police officers in it, as well as Joe Williams, local peace activist and musician, coming on at 11. And before that, more interviews. Stay with us.
The question, who wants a band? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who wants a band? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead in New York? Who owns the land? Gonna be 6 million Jews. Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man who owns the land. I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who wants a plan? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question, who wants a plan? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
home? We're talking with
Kat.
And Kat, your comment on the latest activity here is... Why are you talking about this fenced-off area? Are you talking about some police misconduct you've seen? What are you speaking of?
I'm just talking about the fucking police because they suck. Because instead of going and taking care of all of the complaints against like, sexual harassment and stuff, they go and harass the homeless for smoking pot. I mean, Santa Cruz was founded on smoking pot and skateboarding, and now it's pretty much the most illegal thing to do in the city. What the fuck's with that?
So can you tell me, like, in the last couple of weeks, where you've seen police harassing people for marijuana and skateboarding? I notice you yourself have a skateboard nearby.
Yeah, I do.
Always.
I've already gotten 2 skateboarding tickets from the fucking community service officer and then Baker. And just...
Are we talking about Officer Bechtel, the,
yeah.
the chunky woman with the light...
No, Baker, the fat fuck.
Okay, so not from the community service officer.
The tall, ugly, bald guy. I don't know his name, but he's, yeah.
And you've gotten 2 tickets for skateboarding, and you said there have also been citations for marijuana possession or harassment?
I've actually never gotten a citation, but I've been rolled up on a couple times. And we're just smoking a bowl, and we get, you know, felt out, and we get our names run, and we get harassed, and it takes a whole lot longer than it really needs to.
Did you say felt up?
Yes.
So that you're saying that these cops are sexually harassing you as a woman?
No, just that we get searched and fucking patted down. That's just my way of saying it.
Okay, so you're not claiming improper behavior by the police, at least in terms of a search?
No.
You could be carrying, well, hell, nuclear weapons as possible.
Oh, yeah, I'm an international terrorist. Right.
All right, so you heard her confessing, folks. I will be calling up the Ashcrofty and Angels, as we get, to come and do a little... Anyway, thank you, Kat.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Any comments here? You, sir, in the gray and black glasses, what is your comment on?
I think it's great that they think that this is going to solve the problem, but what this really does...
You're talking about the moving the railing?
Yeah, moving the rail is just an example of how, like, trying to kick people out of the town and saying this is the kind of people we want and this is the kind of people we don't want, which is basically prejudicism. And to me, it's kind of racism because homeless people are their own race. This just creates more violence. The harder they try to push us out of towns and the harder it is for us to survive, the more people are going to go to violence in order to solve their problems and survive in everyday life. This is like a stupid thing because they don't even realize it, but they think they're hurting the homeless and not the citizens. The citizens are going to get so fucking irritated by having to come clear up by the window and walk all the way down. And
having no place to sit.
Yeah, that, and it's going to make them have to get in single file. It's going to disrupt conversations. People coming out of the store are going to have to wait on crowds that are walking by in order to get out of the building. You know?
They're going to keep the same amount of sidewalk space. They're just going to remove the railing is going to move out 3 inches, so you simply won't be able to sit there anymore.
I just think this is a prime example of how violence is created in the long run. This is like totally uncalled for, no reason whatsoever, except for get rid of homeless people. And we'll always come through because we're on Highway 1 and this is our stop. It's been a stop for 30 years.
Have you seen any concerns in the last week that have drawn your attention to police misbehavior, anything of that sort?
Yeah, the parole officers and probation officers came right down here, 2 benches down from there, at Hippie's Corner, and was like, wow, probation officer. And the back two looked at us and pointed at us, are you on parole? Are you on parole? Are you on parole? Are you on parole? To like 6 different people sitting in the area. And none of them were talking except for me when I said, oh, look, there's probation officers downtown in a pack. And then there's probably about 3 times the amount of cops in the last week that roam the street 24/7 than there has been in the last 2 years I've been hitchhiking in.
And how many police was that?
Used to be like 2 or 3 patrol up and down the streets and then 2 or 3 city hosts go up and down the streets to harass people. Now they travel in 2 packs of 3 up and down the street and then they have the side streets that have cops that walk on them on foot. Plus they have vehicles that come through every 5 minutes.
Now, is this because of an increased violence problem downtown? Have you seen any increased violence?
The only violence I've seen down here in the last 2 weeks is a guy got stabbed in the heart, and he was a house person that wasn't even from here. He's from San Jose.
You've been talking with?
Aramius.
Aramius, thank you for your update. I don't want to leave you out, sir. What's your name?
Mistaken.
Of course. I would You're mistaken. I'm not. So what? Anything comments? I see you too have a criminal skateboard. Have you been ticketed lately?
Oh yeah, I got a ticket the other day for skating on a side street when I was told by an officer that I could stop skating at the signs where it said the Muni Code signs where it says no skateboarding, no dogs, and all that. I stopped and I still got a ticket for that.
Who is the police officer who gave you a ticket?
Bachtel, whatever.
CSO Bachtel. Or is it Bechtel? I'll have to ask the officer. Yes, I remember. Yes, he was the one I was referring to as the short, chunky officer. I, too, am chunky. We are a chunky group. But I'm not giving out tickets for skateboarding. That's maybe one of the differences.
Yeah, it is. And also about the planner. I find it funny how a town that's built on liberalism and the ability to do as you please and just be yourself turns more and more fascist every day.
And have you seen any other instances of police behavior that have concerned you, or perhaps commendable police behavior? Let's talk about the positive, too, if you can think of anything.
Commendable police behavior was Miss Bynes letting me go because they found out that I had two skateboarding warrants, and the short Bachtel wanted to take me to jail, and Miss Bynes was like, no, that's George. Let him go. Here, give me your ticket book.
That was Officer Wendy Bynes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I've heard some...
Who knows in my book.
So there you are, a special slap in the chops for Officer Bechtel and a pat on the back for Officer. Thank you both. Thank you all. Oh, there's supposed to be no animals on the app, but they've been giving this kid a ticket and Jeremy's wrapping his dog back there in front of the garage bar. He's got like two free tickets back to that store. He was trying to talk to Yoni Golden last night about a forum on your ticket. Yoni successfully fought a ticket where he has a dog who was off the mall. And again, Sergeant Baker was harassing him for that. If he comes by and leaves his name at the table, or we're actually having a Huff meeting now in about 5 minutes at the coffee roasting company. If you see him, tell him to come in. We're talking with
David Opelitz.
Well, and David, you're a worker downtown. You use your bike. It's about 10 o'clock in the morning. We're in front of the Borders, and CSO Bechtel and her associate have washed away the chalk messages on the sidewalk that informed the public of what their colleagues were doing in destroying public seating space at taxpayer expense. But you yourself had an encounter with the police officer Bechtel, the community service officer yourself.
Yeah, actually I work at Dominican Hospital. I'm a registered nurse, and I got off shift. And as often as the case, I come downtown at the Santa Cruz Coffee Company, get a bagel, and I was on my bike, coasting very carefully. And, you know, I'm a man, I'm an adult. I know to go carefully on the sidewalk. And the funny thing is that bikes really never kill people. Bikes are at mercy of cars on the roadway. If they had to do their job of public safety, they would be patrolling cars in a dangerous way. Nevertheless, anyway, she came up to me and said something. I didn't hear it. And I said, what did you say? She said, with a smirk, she said, I can give you an expensive ticket. And I just got off work working 12 hours and was hurt, you know, by her. Basically, I obeyed. I said, yes, ma'am.
And she said, you took your dignity, been assaulted and humiliated?
No, because I'm a man. I got a daughter. I take care of my daughter. You know, I got a mother. I don't need her to talk to me that way. And I'm very safe on my bike, and I think it's okay for people to here and there, carefully, whether it's a sidewalk or a train. I'm sure there are cases where people are violent. But like I said before, you know, the ideal community, not even from an ideal community, we should learn how to police ourselves underneath these cop squads and sidewalks intervening in our private lives. And I'm a worker, and she's just harassing people. Like I said, if she really wants to ensure injuries from bicycles or cars, she should be patrolling the cars. But, you know, you don't find the cars still nearby?
Cars certainly kill a lot more people than bikes, that's for sure. Listen, thank you. I'm sorry this happened to you. I encourage you to file a complaint against her, by the way.
So she's not a policeman, really?
She is a police officer, but she's a CSO, which is a more limited form of police officer. They're the they're not quite cops in training, but they're a different level of, I think they get paid less, and...
But fine, basically, this is a big picture, I think, I just moved to Santa.
Hey, this is Earth Mama. Gosh, I wasn't going to really talk about this, but then I realized that maybe I could, because it's kind of on the topic you're talking about right now.
Uh-huh.
Well, as far as police, because we like to talk about the police here at Free Radio. Oh, my God. Get some feedback here. Sorry. Okay, so yesterday I was riding my bike along the levee, and I came across these police officers in the process of arresting a man. And I rode up, and I was on my bike, and I was on the levee, and they were right in the middle of the path that I needed to go on. And so I slowly rode towards them, thinking they'd cut my way, which they didn't. They were like, oh, we got it, this guy's dangerous or something. Can you just stop, wait just a second? And they're all, should we? And they look at each other, and they kind of nod to each other. Yeah, let's do it. Let's just take this guy off the street. And the guy looked at me like, you know, everyone looks at someone when, you know, if you ever have eye contact with a pedestrian or someone who's not in uniform when you're being arrested, you have this look on your face. It's this look of, please save me, but I know you can't. And I don't blame you, but I wish you could, because this is fucked up. And I had the look on my face like, buddy, if I could save you, I would. And then I looked at the police officers and mad dogged them. And I couldn't stop myself. I didn't say a word to any of them, but I just looked at them and mad dogged them. He asked, why am I being arrested? Okay, this guy's totally calm, totally mellow, a little resistant when they're putting the cuffs on. As, you know, that's kind of natural, normal behavior. You don't usually just let someone put handcuffs on you and lock you away without wishing there was something you could do to get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he wasn't, like, violent or anything, totally mellow guy. Oh, we're not arresting you. We're taking you in for psychiatric evaluation.
Is that what they said?
That's what they fucking told him.
Huh.
And I couldn't fucking believe it. That's when I started really mad-dogging them and trying to figure out what the cops' names were and stuff.
How many were there?
There were three.
And where was this?
On the levee.
And
he was just a, you know, I don't know if he was homeless or not. He was a little unkept, you know, but he wasn't, it didn't smell bad. I mean, he wasn't, like, visibly drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, he wasn't, like, really emotional. He was calm.
Caucasian,
and they just took him right off the street.
And,
just like that, right in front of me and my baby.
Earth Mama, where on the levee was this, more or less?
It was right near Cinema 9, or not Cinema 9, Riverfront.
Uh-huh. And about what time of day?
8 o'clock.
In the morning or evening?
Evening.
Uh-huh. And did you notice the names of any of the police officers?
Yeah, but I can't remember it. But it was, if I saw the name, I'd remember it.
Uh-huh. Was there a sergeant there, you think, or?
Well, there was one guy who seemed like he might have been a little bit different than the other guys, because he looked like he was more just down in the back giving the orders, and they were like the men in the front doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was like this weird setup that you kind of saw going down,
mm-hmm.
where this guy's just standing there doing nothing, but he's really telling them what to do,
mm-hmm.
or something. So I thought he was the sergeant, and that was the name I looked at.
Well, the
and there was, that was the other thing. There was a police dog in one of the cars,
uh-huh.
and the police dog was just going crazy, like it wanted to just attack something.
Uh-huh.
It was, like, barking and, like, running back and forth. And it wasn't, like, you know, like, I don't know, it was just weird. It was really scary in a way, because I felt like if that dog had been free, it would have ripped that man apart, because, it was, you know, it would sense his fear that he was being arrested.
Was the car parked on the levee or on the street, or where was that?
It was parked on the street.
And we're talking, what, Front Street, or?
River? No, wait.
Right, Lower River Street. What was the street behind the city? River
Right, right, exactly. By Donato's.
Near the
Donato's.
And, I can advise callers and you what I would might do in the next session.
Oh, I'm not speaking to the police, dude.
Right. Well, my suggestion is to request of the individual, you know, what are you being arrested for? Do you want to say, or do you want to ask? If he says no, you're being taken in for a second after the hold. You say, on what basis? Am I a danger to others, a danger to myself, or gravely disabled? And those are the three criteria. There's still the criteria, even though there's been this weakening of criteria under the new SB 1421 in some counties. So that's something that people might be interested in knowing. I appreciate your taking interest in this earth, Mama. I mean, it's the more people stop and as they
but
sing
see, the problem is, Robert, you know, I have my kid with me. Yeah. I didn't say a word. Yeah. I'm not going to open my mouth and let them arrest me for nothing and put my kid in fucking CPS.
Right.
You know, just because they're fucking punks.
Yeah, I understand. And
they don't like people questioning what they're doing because they think they have all authority.
That's always
and that's totally the vibe I get from them every fucking time.
Right, well, remember...
They just act like they're in the middle of the fucking path,
right.
So people can't pass. Right. And they're standing there like, what the fuck is your problem? Why don't you figure out a way to pull your fucking bike and burly around us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Fuck them, dude. But if
Did
I say that,
else,
what happens?
Was anybody else around or no? Just you?
Me and my friend Joanne, she was behind me, and that was pretty much and the guy and the three cops.
Another thing people can do is carry little cameras. If you get the $7 camera, you can buy at the store that detects them up to 27 shots. That's useful to have, but for different purposes of different kinds. And
that's
you know,
true.
I of course carry a cheap little $20 tape recorder with me because you never can tell when that comes in handy.
Which almost kind of brings me to what the reason I was calling actually. And that is, I want to invite everyone that's listening from your show, to your show right now, to the Critical Mass this Friday. I'm planning on going with a recorder to record people's reasons for doing Critical Mass or for believing in Critical Mass, and ideas about bicycles, which was kind of cool, along with what you were just playing. If I could get a little audio of that somewhere, I'd be really stoked. But I want to try to really get people's ideas about bicycles because I'm planning an upcoming show about bikes.
When is your show, Mom?
My show is Fridays now. It's Fridays from 2 to 5 instead of Saturdays. So I'm on Fridays from 2 to 5. Okay.
And finally, when does the Critical Mass begin? Where do people join it?
What? I'm sorry.
When is the Critical Mass and where do people, how do people join
it? Oh, I'm sorry. The Critical Mass? Shit, is it at 5 or 6? Maybe someone out there is an avid bike rider and knows exactly the time.
Okay.
I think it's 6, but I'm not sure. You could just show up at 5 and hang around
at the clock tower.
And it's the last Friday of every month.
Okay.
I think it's at 5 p.m. It is at 5 p.m. That's right, because that's traffic.
So 5 o'clock this Friday, Critical Mass. I know a month ago, Critical Mass people
were arrested. Which is another reason we should all go out there this time, because we just need to let the police know that just if there were, you know, however many bicyclists there were, there's 10 times that more sitting at home that were a little too tired that day to go out, but now we are going to come out, and we're going to take back our fucking streets, and those cops can shove it.
Do you know what happened to the police when he was arrested?
No.
If anybody out there does, give a call to Free Radio at 427-3772 and talk about it.
That's it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for stopping and thank you for telling us about it. And indeed, you can be a part of this discussion. If you've heard of anything regarding the case of the man who was arrested for, I guess, resisting arrest or running from the police, or, and that's not too clear to me what he was arrested for. Apparently, there was a testimony for people who are not the most radical fools in the shed. Such as a Michael Proskiner, who has been very moderate in their regards, for some, who's spoken about this as an unjustified and abusive arrest. And that is, of course, all the more reason for people to show up on Friday at 9 o'clock at 5 o'clock to join Critical Mass. Once you get back from your Sacramento protest, those who are away, inform your friend if she or he is away in Sacramento, they got that to local. WTOs are going on today. Hopefully we'll have some updates from Sacramento at some point. But local. While they have our attention focused on Washington, Sacramento, they're still in the shell game going on. 427-3772. Let's hear some more interviews. These interviews, I believe, are from late May. No, early June. That's when Jon Golder had his forum on Fight Your Ticket, which we have on audio tape and video tape. That's a video tape. We'll put on audio tape. And if you're interested in learning how to fight your ticket, come to a Huffley meeting, Baker Square, at 8:30 every Wednesday morning, 1107 Baker Ocean Street, Baker Square, where the pie shop restaurant joint. You meet at free coffee if you can't afford it. And if you can't get to a meeting and still want to fight for ticket, you disqualify Mulligan, plead not guilty of the agreement, and you give for ticket. Tapes. We have some interesting stuff coming up on today's show. As I mentioned before, at 11, we're expecting Mike True, who's a singer. In fact, I think we should probably play one of his songs shortly in honor of his coming onto the show again. He's been on the air before. He was arrested, cited. I think he may have even been arrested. My recollection fails me here, but he was displaying the CDs of his song downtown as he played. And then on some occasions he simply had them on him, and the police harassed him, arrested him, cited him, certainly two out of the three. And he went to the Fassbinders, attorneys in Hawaii, who have successfully defended Becky Johnson from the LAPD and are actually defended them, gotten money out of the LAPD for their beating of Johnson down during the Democratic Convention in 2000. She's a local activist and video journalist and also the producer of this show. Who also does a show, Club Cruise. And they also, Fassbinders also are defending, on the plaintiff. The city is on the defense, and the police, Sergeant Baker, one of them, in my case, demanding an injunction and demanding a monetary benefits and recompense for the unconstitutional and illegal seizure of my table while I was tabling to try to stop the gentrification of the New Leaf. What was the Sushi Now Alibaba's Cafe area in front of Pacific and Church and is now the Cafe Campesino New Leaf area, which has gotten mellower, and I want to commend those two businesses on being more tolerant of people who are using the tables that are also serve as the business tables during the day, but should be. I really still don't think they should be there in that particular place when they destroy so many public seating spaces and do so as a sort of a blatant social cleansing downtown, an attempt to harass and eliminate a certain class of people and to destroy places where people gather, because the objective was not to really facilitate the restaurants. The objective was to deal with what the redevelopment agency, the city police, various other conservative bureaucrats, and some residents and council members regarded as a trouble spot downtown. That was a year and a half ago. Anyway, the Mike True's coming on the air. And in honor of that, I think we need to hear Mike again. I've played this song before, but it's a good song. It's called Desperado Blues, and it reflects his concerns about the status of musicians in Santa Cruz and street performers and poor people generally. And now, oh, here he sings for himself.
Outlaw, I ain't no thief. My spirit's willing, but these habits, they run deep. I ain't the bad guy, I didn't shoot anyone, but you got me running like a last bar West Outlaw. You got me hiding in the shadows. Been a long, long time since I seen the sun. I ride by night like an outlaw. Wanted dead or alive for having too much fun. Try to make a living, but your work day never stops. It's a trail well ridden, never takes you to the top. I don't want to change things, just the right to choose. But you got me singing those desperado blues. You got me hiding in the shadows. Long, long time since I've seen the sun. I ride by night like an outlaw. Wanted dead or alive for having too much fun. Yeah, yeah, wanted dead or alive for having too much fun. Questions why? Yeah, even here in Santa Cruz, the city of love and peace, I'm getting busted by the local police for playing in the streets. That's right. You got me hiding in the shadows. Been a long, long time since I've seen the sun. Alive for having too much fun. Yeah, yeah, wanted dead or alive for having too much fun. Like an outlaw singing desperado blues.
Mike True, Desperado Blues. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you can still hear us over the sounds of the sermons from the encroaching Christian radio to the south. Apparently a Christian station put up a translator either in what, Salinas, I believe it was, and they're, or perhaps Watsonville, and they're directing their thunder and slime in our direction. I don't want to say slime. Well, I probably do want to say slime, actually. And people out on 41st, we used to be able to be heard as far south as La Selva Beach. We're getting blasted away. Don't know what to tell you as to what to do. And if folks have any suggestions, give us a call at 427-3772. Feel free to comment. The one proposal is that Free Radio Santa Cruz move to another frequency. That's been suggested. Another is that a second radio station be opened up, though it would face the same problem. But hey, I've been urging other groups to put together pirate radio stations themselves. I mean, there is space on the airwaves in different places. Apparently the Christians don't mind blasting away one of the few good radio stations in the state, but that's nothing new. I mean, that's how it goes. We have to find creative alternatives to work around this, or monkey wrench it one way or another. So today there's a lot I've got on my agenda, and I'm going to try to start early and actually get through some of it. Roxana Kista Pache, who runs an advocate group for folks fighting abusive CPS stuff, that's so-called child protective services, often child punitive services, where children are stolen from people, parents. We've followed a number of cases, Chaya's case, Asha's case, And most recently, another couple spoke on the air about their case. They were, I think it was Orly and Stacy, had their four children taken in April because they said they were homeless. The specific claim was that they'd smoked marijuana in front of their children. And Stacy apparently has a medical marijuana card and medical marijuana. He has a medical condition. He claims he doesn't do it anyway. This was said by some malicious person who he wouldn't share his marijuana with. And the word from Roxanne, for those who are following this case, is that she can't be on the air today because she's out of town until Tuesday, and we were going to put her on Thursday, but due to my overbooking, I wasn't able to do that. Spaced it out and got other stuff I was putting on. A good show with Tom Noddy at that point, but we'll have Roxanne hopefully back next Thursday. But while she's not for sure on that, but her report is that it looks like they're going to be, they're told now they're going to get their four kids back, and that, of course, is good, but what CPS says and what CPS does are often two different things, so we'll have to keep tuned on that. If you want to get in touch with Roxanne with a CPS problem you have of your own, you can give a call to 462-5509. That's her CPS advocacy number, 462-5509. She's also going to be, by the way, on San Francisco Liberation Radio on Tuesday night up in San Francisco. San Francisco Liberation Radio. Now, I don't have the website for that, but if you go on the web, you can find out how to see if it streams. I don't know if San Francisco Liberation Radio streams. I know it broadcasts directly in San Francisco, so you might want to check that out. Who knows? Maybe we can get a tape of what she said up there, and I think it may be on the same subject. That's something she wanted me to pass on. That'll be at 8 p.m. on Tuesday night. Yeah, 8 a.m. on Tuesday night sounds a little contradictory. 8 p.m. on Tuesday night, and that's happening. We also have local stuff coming up, as we have every 2 weeks generally. There's another one of those city council meetings in the city of Santa Cruz. You can get the dope on the city council meeting by going to the city of Santa Cruz website and clicking on latest agenda, and you'll get the city clerk's version of what's going to be coming up on the agenda. And you can also get a copy of it at the library and look at the packets there. That's the main public library downtown, which is across from City Hall, not hard to find. And you can also get a copy of the agenda in the city clerk's office. So the city clerk's office and city council offices generally become much less friendly to the public. They used to have a newspaper there for you to read. They used to have files for you to look at. They've moved all that to the library because they want to essentially clear out people from those offices that aren't part of their little group or don't have, quote, official business there. And there's, you know, it's also true, however, and it has to be said, they also have an objective of, well, the incidental benefit and perhaps the objective, certainly one of my objectives, I don't really know how much of an objective it is of the city council staff and city clerk staff, is to make the records more easily accessible. And in the public library, to some extent, they are more easily accessible because the library is open longer hours than the city council offices that are open only 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, every weekday. And the offices are also, the library is open on the weekends and the library is open later, though not earlier. It's open, I guess, from 10. I think is it from 9 or from 10 to usually 9 o'clock in the evening on Fridays. I think it's 6 o'clock. And there are shorter hours on the weekend. One of the problems with the library, however, is you have to present a picture ID to take out and look at documents, which at least that's what I was told. The guy looked at me and said he knew me and he wouldn't require a picture ID because I was always taking out documents and so forth. But you know, I mean, to be at the mercy of the library staff, and before you could just look at the stuff in the city council offices without presenting such documentation, unless there's a real need or problem shown, is another example of a layer of bureaucratic static that's being put up to separate you from the information that might be helpful in making decisions as to whether city council staff, and exactly, actually I should say how city council staff is hornswoggling the community. Whether it's the ripoff of low-income housing and the Dolphin Lee Nueva Vista project, which is coming back to city council again. There's a story on, a very glowing story by Heather, Heather Kissass Burner. That's not quite fair. Heather Burner is a writer for the Santa Cruz Sentinel. But on the issue of the Dolphin Lee Nueva Vista, she has spared no expense and effort to cover up, not discuss, not publicize the critics who were saying that they were destroying more housing, they were building. She never did any research on it. And then she, I think she did a smear story on Nena Ruiz, who is the Latina union activist who tried to mobilize some of the former tenants of the Dolphin Lee to resist and demand there be no forced evictions from the no forced evictions and rushed process until there were they could really guarantee that everyone who was living there then would be let back in. And SCAN agreed with that and so forth, the Santa Cruz Action Network, and it was a big cause. Celebrity, you may remember Mayor Sugar talked about them living in filthy conditions, packed in like sardines. Sugar was a big advocate of this Mercy Housing, Catherine Byers' plan, which has since been rammed through. Anyway, Berner has written, she writes, every Sunday she writes interesting stories in the Sentinel's Sunday real estate section. That's a section I don't usually look at in the paper, and I try to avoid buying the Sentinel any day. It's overpriced, and it's the news is generally distorted, and it's you're contributing to sort of a bad business. There are a bunch of bigots down there, frankly, sort of in a word, even though Tom Honig, the editor, did come on the air, and I want to commend him for that, and made himself available. But Berner does have, if you get to this to the library, or you can read somebody else's copy, and you don't want to spend $1.50, which is how much it costs on the weekends, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, you can check the real estate section. She's doing stuff on granny units and affordable housing, which is sort of, again, a puff job, I guess, around the current politically acceptable and long overdue decriminalization of granny units, which I support, but of course they still aren't doing it directly. They're doing it, you know, inch by inch by inch, taking decades to do it. I mean, Kennedy was talking about this in 94, but nothing was happening, and here we are in 2003. I mean, obviously they have no sense, proportionate sense of the needs people have. It's just not there, and it's just sad. So, boy, do I get lost in my raps. Let's see. What have I got here? I've got... we've got more interviews coming up from the Planter, too. That's happening. Interviews from the Walnut Street Pacific Trading Company's private little garden out there. It used to be public seating space. It is on the public sidewalk. The Pacific Trading Company isn't paying any money to lease the area. It hasn't put it through a public process. But lo and behold, their complaints resulted in the destruction of, 20 to 30 seating spaces. It's hard to say how many they actually destroyed. Three sides of the large, one of the four large planters downtown, one of which has already been essentially fenced off at the New Leaf Market, again, as part of the gentrification effort downtown. So, got some interviews on that the day that it was destroyed. You heard some of those interviews in a prior show. I do a show here twice a week, for those of you who are new, on Thursdays, 6 to 8 in the evening, and on Sundays today, and every Sunday from 9:30 to 1, usually, unless there's a change in the schedule because other people need to slip in before or after. But, Pacific Trading Company is the one of the main culprits here. The police department apparently is behind the process, and the city... All the rest of us are being cut out, and again, you get to see this heavy-handed police presence and the destruction of public space at the police behest. I mean, one wonders, as Tom Noddy suggested last show, why the police don't run for office if they want to make political decisions. Why don't they simply, you know, run for city council? You know, and then they get on the council, then they can, you know, openly and democratically present their fascist positions. I'm not saying the police are always fascist. I'm saying when the police collude with business to discriminate against a class of people, stigmatize and criminalize homeless people, when they do so behind closed doors, when they do so in such a way as to give the police the power to make decisions the citizenry should be making, that is fascist. Yes, that is fascist. I'm sorry. That is a corporate connection of police and business. And there are also other definitions of fascist that it also fits. Anyway, that's what you have on the avenue. You don't have reasonable mediated solutions to problems. You don't have non-criminal behavior being people being allowed to live their lives. Instead, you have police going and selectively enforcing ordinances to harass the youth in front of borders, to harass political activists in front of the Pacific Trading Company, to harass the peace vigil when it was at Cathcart at Cooper and Pacific across from the Cinema 9. you have police going after particular squeaky wheels in the community that really are kind of like the canaries in the coal mines that tell you when the air is turning bad, you know? You won't know it until it's all gone. That's the problem, unless we tell you, unless you can hear the dying cries or the screams of people being taken to jail, which is why I'm increasingly feeling under pressure to challenge the new move-along law. That's the law that makes it criminal for you to have a political table for more than an hour in any one place. And that hopefully will be happening sooner than you think. I keep saying that, and I keep not doing it, putting it off, which I may keep doing, because I keep hoping to organize a broader group of people to do it. But we saw what happened when we delayed organizing in September after the downtown ordinances were passed. It said no hacky sacking, no frisbee playing, no bubble blowing, no sitting within 14 feet of a building. Generally speaking, those who have display devices. So, and there was no protest then either. And I think you got to do something. And so that, I'm feeling increased pressure there. I mean, I got other things to do. You know, I got personal medical matters to attend to. And we're trying to stop the Laurel Street signs, which is the signage kind of in back of Kinko's, or where the vans are parked, where Front Street meets Pacific as it heads toward the boardwalk. The city police, apparently a new brainstorm there is to drive all the vehicles away from there by, you know, posting the area with signs. And we're fighting that, and that still needs to be done, and that needs to be flyered. There are many, many struggles that have to go on. And of course, the broader struggles against the Ashcroftian national legislation, which at least some people are talking about, and some national organizations are fighting. The ACLU has gotten apparently a 50% increase in its membership. But apparently the ACLU locally cannot afford 10 cents worth of time to deal with local violations of civil liberties. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't, that doesn't matter. You know, it's just, it's Robert Norris. Oh, it's just those homeless people. Oh, it's just, questionable individuals. In fact, it's the principles and the issues that are at stake here. When a guy gets arrested for having a little fuck the police sign in his hat, things are not good. Because much as you may disagree with the wording of that sign, one, you have to understand the history that created it, and two, you have to remember that this is America, that we have been able to be productive and grow and have a kind of relatively, well, it's never been a free dialogue, it's always been a struggle, but the impetus behind this is the First Amendment and the belief that many of us have that the way you deal with unpopular speech is with more speech, not with police repression. You know, there are some who say, well, if you got Nazis walking around on the streets, you want to, you know, take them down. Well, if you want to challenge Nazis yourself as individuals, if you want to stand, however you do it, that, you know, I recommend peaceful means. Others take more violent means in dealing with these issues. But you don't give that over to the government to do, because you will find it is a juggernaut out of control. And the way to know that is just to look at Washington and look at Sacramento and look at Santa Cruz City Hall right now. And you see, it is out of control. Now, if you have any thoughts on this, give us a call at 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's what you're listening to, if you're able to hear us, that is. And while I'm waiting for this tumult of calls, you might want to listen to this.
I'm not even a doctor. peace of mind. But the jails, they were too crowded, institutions overflowed. So they set me loose to walk upon life's a very tangled road. And there's danger on the ocean where the salt sea waves split high.
Phil Oakes from The Best of Broadside, The Ballad of Donald White. Actually, it wasn't Phil Oakes. It was Bob Dylan, one of Phil Oakes' heroes. Phil Oakes loved Bob Dylan. And you, hopefully, love free radio, and if you don't, maybe you dislike us. And if you dislike us, why don't you give us a call and tell us why? 427-3772. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I don't have my bathrobe on, but I am acquiring a larger collection of bathrobes and threatening to show up on the street any day now with bathrobe and teddy bear in tow to talk about the sleeping ban, actually, hopefully to lead some people in a little slumber. It's illegal, as you may know, perhaps you don't, to sleep in Santa Cruz after the hour of 11 o'clock at night, either in a vehicle or outside. It's a $54 fine, and if the police choose to charge you with camping, which they've been doing lately, though camping is different than sleeping, they can charge you with a $162 fine, and actually you can get a misdemeanor if you do it twice. Now, up in Portland, things are, well, are they a little different or not? I don't know. Apparently, in some sense, they're not, but in another sense, they are. Back in 2000, the Portland District Court found the or maybe it was a local state court, but they found the sleeping ban, actually the whole camping ordinance, unconstitutional. I'm going to read a story from Street Roots. That's the Portland, Oregon homeless newspaper, called You Snooze, You Lose by Joshua Sinelli. Dormant for a spell, the effort to repeal the anti-camping ordinance in Portland has resurfaced with renewed vigor and fresh tactics. The movement, titled Right to Sleep, has strong support in the homeless advocacy community that witnesses the suppression of constitutional rights involving the right to travel and the freedom from cruel and unusual punishment. The campaign is being led by Crossroads, the advocacy organization developed by the Sisters of the Road Cafe, with the support of Street Roots, SAFES, and individuals in the homeless movement. Just as the Out of the Doorways campaign blossomed into what is now Dignity Village, which is a long-standing, now fairly long-standing, homeless-run, homeless-created encampment in Portland, the Right to Sleep campaign hopes to establish common decency along all lines and bring to the attention of the citizens, the government, and the business people that homelessness is not a crime. Organizers say that repealing the camping ban is the first step toward realizing this truth, and then issues surrounding the cause of homelessness and developing a strategic response can be addressed. If you make it illegal to live in the city and illegal for them to sleep, then homeless have the decision of becoming criminals or leaving town, said Mark Jolin of the Oregon Law Center. This is the legislation. And this is legislation that punishes the homeless. On June 25th, Crossroads will conduct a sleeping bag giveaway at 9 a.m. at City Hall. This is Portland, Oregon, folks. I should remind all you sleeping bag hungry people. Not Santa Cruz, though it's a good idea. Those interested may address the City Council at 9:30 a.m., that's the Portland City Council, about the ban. The ordinance, as it stands, makes a crime of life-sustaining conduct, the campaign organizers say. Such activities as ruled by the U.S. District Court include bathing, relieving themselves, sleeping, and trying to keep warm. City officials have defended the ordinance. The shelter emergency shelter capacity, with fewer than 400 beds, meets less than 15% of the houseless population. In Santa Cruz, of course, we have less than 39 floor spaces, which meets less than 5% of the estimated and growing homeless population here. That's on the floors of churches in a mobile program that happens every night, and that is invariably full, according to Karen Brock and others at the Homeless Resource Center here in Santa Cruz. But getting back to Portland, the camping ban has to be brought to light during the early stages of the city's 10-year plan to end homelessness, said Israel Bayer, creative director at Street Roots. Decriminalizing homelessness should be considered part of the solution to start placing people in permanent housing. Even if the city isn't giving out actual fines or tickets on the anti-camping ordinance, they are using it to shuffle homeless people around the city when all they're trying to do is get a night's sleep. People become sleep-deprived, and that only makes it harder to jump through the system's hoops just to survive. When you're tired, you're not on. Nobody else is openly challenging this right now, and we feel that a seed has to be planted. We feel that as a voice of the homeless, it is our mission to bring this inhumane ordinance to its end. In 2000, Judge Stephen Gallagher concluded that the anti-camping ordinance in the case of Wicks versus Oregon was unconstitutional and wrote in his ruling, quote, "The homeless are being punished for behavior indistinguishable from the mere fact that they are homeless." The case centered on the Wicks, a man and his son who had been living out of their truck. The court found it impossible to separate the fact of their being homeless from the necessary acts that go with it, such as sleeping. The ordinance was also found to be in violation of equal protection and the fundamental right to travel. Dave Mazza, editor of the activist publication The Portland Alliance, said other cities beside Portland, have introduced draconian methods to punish people off the streets to hide the unseemly sights of capitalism. Mazza recalled a time in the early 1980s around the time that the anti-camping ordinance was passed, when the city installed water sprinklers in the building overhangs to wet the sidewalks and keep the area in front of the stores free from undesirables. At the core of it, the city places priority on the Portland Business Alliance over the citizens of the city, Mazza said. Since the Gallagher ruling, the anti-camping ordinance has been issued sparingly. I suppose it means tickets under the anti-camping ordinance. And those who have been cited have the opportunity to do community service or challenge it and risk paying a $100 fine. More often, the police are using other methods of removing homeless from public areas, such as trespassing citations, drug-free zone exclusions, and sweeps in the early hours of the morning. The senior Wicks said the time and effort of police could be better spent. Being homeless is not a crime, and it is demeaning to police, he says, who are forced to spend time they could be used to fight real crime to roust homeless people, he said. According to the National Coalition for Homelessness, what often happens is that the local police and city parks and sanitation workers are dispatched to clean up downtown areas with little or no training on what local resources exist or how to work effectively with people who may be experiencing mental health, chemical addiction, or chronic medical issues. Law enforcement is a poor social service provider, said David Baker of SAFES, Survivors Advocating for an Effective System, and a supporter of the Right to Sleep campaign. All parties have to step from behind their official roles and look at the humanity issues. The repeal of the camping ban fits into our larger organizational goal of compassionate criminal justice. Katz, that's the mayor of Portland, in 2000 challenged the Gallagher ruling and continued working to remove the homeless from downtown, insisting that she wanted to prevent city neighborhoods from becoming unsafe and unsanitary campgrounds. In his ruling, Gallagher said the city's purpose may be compelling to protect the safety and welfare of its citizens, but he says there are less intrusive means to achieve the same purpose. The act of sleeping or eating in a shelter away from the elements cannot be considered intentional, avoidable conduct. In anticipation of the Rose Festival, thousands of people in what could be termed an avoidable action, because they had homes of their own, roosted on the sidewalks to get the best view of the grand floral parade. The Portland Tribune published a light feature about the people who camped out on the sidewalk titled Happy Campers. In chronicling events, John Jameson, one of those sleeping on the sidewalk with his family, declared it is certainly an unusual thing to do. It's kind of like a bum's night out. After the parade, the people went home and were not exposed to police intervention, which is reserved for people who have no home to retreat to. If you don't have a choice of where to go or where to sleep, then being punished for being homeless serves no incentive or purpose. That's the crux of what's described as the necessity defense, which basically says that if the city doesn't have adequate shelter for its homeless residents, then people are justified in sleeping in public because they have nowhere else to go. The Portland City Council has the ability to repeal the camping ban, as does the Santa Cruz City Council to repeal the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban and the camping ordinance too, but remains united thus far against taking that action. Questions to the mayor and city council members about what it would take to overturn the camping ban went unanswered for this report. Jamie Manuel of Crossroads has his own opinion about the matter. It would take politicians to recognize that their political career could be jeopardized by violating civil rights and constitutional rights, he said. During the tug of war with the peace encampment at Terry Shrunk Plaza, the police posted a 24-hour anti-camping notice but did not follow up with any arrests. Instead, they have confiscated items on the sidewalk in the name of the preservation of property. They took people out of their chairs and removed people from their sleeping bags. On September 10, 2001, the police posted a 24-hour notice on a protest camp that had branched off from Dignity Village. They arrested everyone before the 24-hour notice ran out, and the people were pardoned because the police did not follow procedure correctly, a tactic that some organizers fear could be used again if a camp sprouts up to directly challenge the ordinance. If the police do not follow the procedure correctly, the case will be thrown out before there is a constitutional challenge. That's a story from Street Roots newspaper in Portland, Oregon, about a new effort in Portland to challenge the camping ban and the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban there. I guess they're challenging the entire camping ordinance there. Lots of interesting things in this issue of Street Roots. Want to see it? Come to the next Huff meeting at Baker's Square. I'll bring it along. That's at 1107 Ocean Street, and that's Wednesday morning at 8:30. In the meantime, you want to jump on board here? Have you been awakened from your sleep rudely by police or seen that happen, or do you have some interests or concerns around that issue that you want to bring up? Well, the phone number is free. 427-3772 is the number to call. Give us a call, and I will talk about it with you. Maybe we can get a wee in here, too. We can wee all the way. 427-3772.
Two good old boys from my hometown. They were good boys, not so old boys. You really couldn't say they had been around. When it came to race, creed, color, gender orientation, and endangered species, you really couldn't say they'd made a scene. In fact, they were liable to scorch you to the edge of town for wearing the wrong color jeans. Then one night down at the bar, they chanced to meet a representative of some committee of the UN. who introduced them to a couple of her friends, took them on a trip around the world, and later on brought them back again. Roy Jordan and Ed Morgan moved in the two houses down the road. Just to the left and right of mine, but I don't mind long as they keep it up to code. Roy Jordan and Ed Morgan had no sooner gotten out of bed than there were three blonde Muslims, two Peruvian PhDs, and funny ideas getting into their heads. Roy Jordan and Ed Morgan went down to the corner store. Roy Jordan and Ed Morgan really couldn't know what was in store, 'cause there was a Micronesian working on a macro program for a list of all the famous gays in history, when suddenly a spaceship came on by and took them to another planet where there was no corner store, and they really had to wonder why. Well, there was no corners, 'cause there was no straight streets and no straight people. Well, maybe just a few. And I guess you'd have to say they were treated rather well. Georgia, Madonna, and Nine Inch Nails, and Ice-T, and Wu-Tang, and Jews, and stuff, and even Arabs, too. And then Jesus came along, and he was a Rubenesque black lesbian, and they really didn't know what to do. Roy Jordan and Ed Morgan were two good old boys from my hometown. They were good boys, getting to be old boys. I guess you could say they were getting around. Then one night down at the bar, the chancellor met a man who was just this far short of being a mensch, who thought he knew whereof he spewed. So Roy said, "Boy, get a dimension." So one night down at the bar, the chancellor met a man who's fit to be fenced. Tell him they're married to a gay, black, Jewish, Puerto Rican, see if he can figure out which party's against.
It is about 20 to 11. We're in front of the Pacific Trading Company. The sounds you hear are the sounds of jackhammers removing sections of the railing area. And Aramis, I have a word with you. You just had some conversation with a CSO and a host. You've in the past been somewhat critical of these folks. Did they give you a new lease on life?
Yeah, the CSOs are here to support and to take care of us, and they care a lot about us homeless people, and that's why they like to give us tickets when they don't need to give us tickets. And they have a local office down there where we can go and talk to their counselor and give them all of our information so they can profile us.
Well, that's a very cynical view. They were urging you to go talk to Danielle. Is it the mental health worker?
Yeah.
Perhaps you could get a psychotic label and get SSI.
Yeah. They're trying to help us get work. That's why they run us off the avenue. As long as we're not in the avenue, we'll be able to find work on the avenue very easily.
Do you tell them that?
Yeah, they said that they're not responsible for that. They just enforce it.
Hear, hear. Thank you. By the way, how did you enjoy your tabling? You were doing some tabling for Huff earlier.
It was pretty good. I got a phone number for a ride to the Resist World Trade Organizations in Sacramento and talked to a couple other kids. I got, like, all the high school kids out here signed in and several adults, and a couple of activists signed it.
Thank you. And Officer Pollack is the CSO who remains here. Apparently, Sergeant Baker has either retreated to a safe distance or has gone on to another area. I'm glad we have a police here at the crime scene, because this is a crime scene. They are criminally discriminating against a class of people, and this police officer is overseeing this process.
Yeah, it's also making it so nobody else can enjoy the area. A few guys get in trouble here, and everybody has to suffer. It's despicable.
Indeed.
Hey, don't turn it off. I'm disabled and I need places to sit. And this is despicable, I'm saying it, it's rotten. All they're doing is harassing a few people for all. And you know, what is this, a socialist society now?
If it were, you'd be getting free medical aid. And HCSO Bechtel comes out of Jackson's shoes, sipping a coffee. The two of them, spending your money, standing here in front of the Pacific Trading Company. Yeah, are you two investigating a crime of some kind? Is that what's going on?
I'll bet you they all did that. How much do you want to bet?
I have no idea. They don't tell me.
So are you here for a crime purpose? Is there a criminal activity happening here, Officer Pollard?
Couple bad jokes.
He's not saying anything, so I'm assuming there is no crime happening. He's just spending taxpayer money standing here. Here's one of the hosts out of uniform. Apparently, he likes it so much he's coming down here to observe the fruit of his good labor. This is the money that, you know, that our taxpayers are spending.
I can't help that. It does it. There's an absence of light, the flash comes on. When there's light, it doesn't come on.
That's okay. It's Bill Flash.
So, a friendly chat between Officer Pollock and the notorious Grandpa Jim.
Well, you've got to keep in good with these fellows.
You never can tell when you're going to get sighted.
We don't want to.
Yeah.
These guys aren't the bad guys. It's the system that's doing it.
It's the system. They're just innocent victims. I know that.
We don't want any trouble here. We just have
Thomas.
What's the situation? Do I still need to make a phone call?
It looks like we're running into but it sounds like a city council meeting. Yeah, that was the Planters, the demise of the seating area in the Planter at the behest of the Pacific Trading Company, again, at a cost of variously estimated at $12,7200. The final work order says $6,600 from the police department budget. Apparently, they've got some money to engage in sort of offhand seating space, homeless youth removal, but they don't have the money to continue citizen police oversight. I guess that wouldn't be coming out of the police department budget, although you would think that the city council would put aside a little bit of money rather than spending, it spends a chunk, is it, 30% of the budget, more than 50% if you count Parks and Rec and the police together, go for these public safety, quote-unquote, services, though some of the Parks and Rec budget, of course, obviously goes to maintain the parks. It's what's happening downtown, and if you try and set up a table to protest that or to gather petitions against it, they will move you on after an hour, even though it is obviously straightforward infringement of a constitutional right. For example, you know, because it's the Pacific Trading Company that is the store that we are focusing attention on, because they seem to be the ones that are moving the city to spend our money, taxpayer money, out of the police department budget to move a railing 4 inches, something that the city manager falsely characterized as a repair job. But in fact, no repair was made on the railing whatsoever. City manager was either misinformed, they changed their minds, or he was lying. You can be the judge. That's city manager Martin Bernal. He also gave me some 470 pages of emails around the downtown ordinance discussion, emails that took him 6 months to get together. A lot of time to get together emails, which one would think you would get to relatively quickly by simply pressing a search button and then putting the information aside. He also demanded that I take printouts of the emails and pay 10 cents a page instead of getting, let's say, an email version of it myself that could be more easily moved about and passed on to other activists and other members of the community who want to know what private interests are emailing to the city council members, and the city council members are emailing back to the private interests. This is quite a voluminous amount of information. I've only begun to look into it. It's fascinating stuff. I brought it to the studio today, but it's going to take me some time to get through. If you want to be a part of this process of doing research on what the city council is actually doing behind your back, give a call to 423-HUFF. If you have reports on this issue, you can call here into the studio while I'm here for the next couple hours, 427-3772. Or you can call me off air and we can talk about it again on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. We're also hoping to get a report from Andrea Tischler of the Bed, Bud, and Breakfast Compassion Flower Inn. She has been working on keep watchdogging the Board of Supervisors as they push Sheriff Tracy's plan for ID cards for medical marijuana users, supposedly as a service to the medical marijuana users, but something that has caused some concern with some who feel that more lists in government hands are not the way to go, and also why isn't the Board of Supervisors dealing with the real issue of letting medical authorities make determinations on quantity and actually just give a specific some specific numbers on the number of plants and the amount of marijuana that individuals can grow before they will start cracking down and arresting people and seizing medicine, as this sheriffs did last week. 4 days ago, they raided a large pot field. Apparently they call it the largest pot grow they'd found since 2000 or something, and did so in concert with federal groups. This is your sheriff's department, that wonderful, friendly, ever-so-cooperative Mark Tracy, who I also want to commend for coming on the air on free radio, but, he's got to do better, much, much better. In fact, I think we can do better than him. So give a call if you have any thoughts on this. Have you been harassed recently for drug use? Any thoughts about the top-heavy system that does this? I mean, all the answers, of course, and a lot of what we're going to say, what we've been saying on this, are just sort of a repetition of past wisdom, sort of old hat stuff that the government, of course, pays no attention to and won't until people show up in numbers. And that kind of brings me to my next little segment here. Ran into a book by an old schoolmate of mine, Ray Raphael, called The First American Revolution, Before Lexington and Concord. We went to high school together, Ray and I, way out in Arizona. And Ray's written a number of very interesting books about different historical subjects. This book is called The First American Revolution. He's also written a very good one called A People's History of the American Revolution, which talks about the real people in the revolution, not just the stuffed shirts and the powdered wigs. But this is the introduction I think is relevant to us today, and as we look for ways to stop the destruction of the U.S. Constitution, to stop the destruction of constitutional rights in Santa Cruz by local authorities. I'm going to read this. It's not too long. The American Revolution did not start with the shot heard round the world on the morning of April 19th, 1775. When British regulars fired upon a small group of hastily assembled patriots on the Lexington Green, they were attempting to regain control of a colony that they had already lost. The real revolution, the transfer of political authority to the American patriots, occurred the previous summer when thousands upon thousands of farmers and artisans seized power from every crown-appointed official in Massachusetts outside of Boston. Starting in August 1774, each time a court was slated to meet under British authority in some Massachusetts town, great numbers of angry citizens made sure it did not. At Great Barrington, 1,500 patriots filled the courthouse to prevent the judges from entering. At Worcester, judges were made to read their recantations 30 times over, hats in hand, as they passed through 4,622 militiamen lined up along Main Street. So, too, at Springfield, where in a sandy, sultry place exposed to the sun, once important officials sweated under the burden of their heavy black suits. The functionaries of British rule cowered and collapsed, no match for the collective force of patriotic farmers. According to an eyewitness, the people of each town, being drawn into separate companies, marched with staves and music. The trumpets sounding, drums beating, fifes playing, and colors flying struck the passions of the soul into a proper tone and inspired martial courage into each. The governor's counselors, once elected but now appointed directly by the crown, were also forced to resign. Thomas Oliver, lieutenant governor of Massachusetts and a counselor as well, ceded to a crowd of 4,000 assembled around his house in Cambridge. Timothy Paine of Worcester was visited by 2,000 men who demanded his resignation. He told a committee he would comply, but his word would not suffice. The people wanted it in writing. Even that was not enough. The crowd demanded that he come out of his house while a representative read his resignation aloud. Again, Paine complied, and again the people wanted more. He would have to read his resignation himself, with his hat off, several times as he passed through the ranks. Nothing else would do. Through it all, the revolutionaries engaged in a participatory democracy which far outreached the intentions of the so-called founding fathers. They gathered under no special leaders. Their ad hoc representatives, such as the five men elected to talk with Timothy Paine, operated according to instructions approved by the assembled crowd and reported back immediately to the body as a whole. Even the nighttime mobs, and there were many, maintained a democratic aspect. In Braintree, 200 men gathered on a Sunday at around 8:30 p.m. to remove some gunpowder from the powder house and to make the local sheriff burn two warrants he was attempting to deliver. Successful in their missions, they wanted to celebrate with a loud huzzah, but should they disturb the Sabbath? They called a vote, wrote Abigail Adams, who observed the affair, and it being Sunday evening, it passed in the negative. In early October 1774, more than 6 months before the Red Dawn at Lexington, all Crown-appointed officials had been forced to disavow British authority or flee to Boston, which was still under military occupation. The flames of sedition, wrote Governor Thomas Gage, had spread universally throughout the country beyond conception. The British had lost all control of the Massachusetts countryside, and they would never get it back. Scholars differ widely on how to define revolution, but a good starting point firmly rooted in common usage can be found in the Random House Webster's College Dictionary, 1997. A complete and forcible overthrow and replacement of an established government or political system by the people governed. In the late summer and early fall of 1774, the people of rural Massachusetts completely and forcibly overthrew the established government and began to set up their own. This was the first American Revolution. While a group of renowned lawyers, merchants, and slave-owning planters were meeting at a Continental Congress in Philadelphia to consider whether or not they should challenge British rule, the plain farmers and artisans of Massachusetts, guarding their liberties jealously and voting at every turn, wrested control from the most powerful empire on the earth. And that is the first American Revolution, Ray Raphael, Before Lexington and Concord. Good book. It's a library book. I borrowed it. You can take it out. He's a good writer, and I encourage you to check him out. Coming into the studio with guitar in hand, I may have to call the police if he plays at the wrong distances here, is the infamous Mike True. We're going to be talking with him shortly. But before we do, here's a little Hamburger Hill for you from Dave Lippman.
Mom and Dad bought and sold four family homes, raised four boys, and then one day Daddy went back to school to become a doctor. I think I might follow in my father's footsteps, except I forgot to have those kids and home and job. I had a job once, but I had to let it go. I had to downsize my expectations. What do you expect? Downhill nation. Maybe I'm not supposed to know this. My job just took a plane. Maybe I'm not supposed to know this. Economy may not be coming back this way again. But just like Pittsburgh lost its steel, Detroit lost it to better wheels, I'm up here working on Hamburger Hill. Don't you know I tried? Don't you know they lied? Don't you ever wonder why? It sometimes seems all your childhood dreams get ground up in a roundup of the evening news. Here I am again, down at the welfare. Here I am again, searching for relief. Here I am again, looking for my health care. Is this a great country or where's the beef? I would have bought American if I could have bought it all. But as falls General Motors, sold the country farms. now I see falls on you and me. I guess I'll go plant zucchini. That's the only green I'm gonna see. Well, I don't know, but I've been told the streets of the future are lined with information. Every time the program changes, the system crashes down on me. I'd like to reprogram that goddamn corporation, cause I'm up here working on Hamburger Hill. You know I try, but you know they lied. Don't you ever wonder why? It sometimes seems all your childhood dreams get ground up in a round of all the evening news. Falling out of the middle class, unemployed while I kick some ass. Whenever the economy fails, they build a dozen new jails. I'm in the jailhouse now. These days I guess you build your own cells and you throw away your own. We gotta learn computers. I wonder, will that help stop the looters who stole the American dream? Maybe I'm not supposed to know this. My job just took a plane. Maybe I'm not supposed to know this. Economy Maine, I'll be coming back this way again. But just like Pittsburgh lost its steel, Detroit lost its a better wheels, I'm up here working on Hamburger Hill. Oh, I tried, don't you know they lied? Don't you ever wonder why? It sometimes seems all your childhood dreams get ground up in a roundup of the evening news. Don't you know I tried, don't you know they lied? Don't you ever wonder why? It sometimes seems all your childhood dreams get ground up in a roundup of the evening news.
And it's about 5:40 on June 12th, Thursday afternoon, down here on Pacific Avenue. We're talking with
John Monahan.
John, you've observed this new railing that has been, actually the old railing, which had a cost of
$7,000
while they're laying teachers off and closing schools. $7,000 to so people can't sit down on the...
Write in a ticket.
Sit down on a piece of concrete. They're moving the railings out so nobody can sit down. Their hatred for the homeless kids are really like getting in out of bounds to the point where they're really being mean to the people, everybody. And it's the most shameful, mean-spirited thing I've seen them do yet. It's really, really pathetic.
You've been around for a number of years?
Yeah, I've been here 5 years.
I can see up the street, they're still blocking off the street, and I guess the cardboard is coming down, the plywood shielding that I hear they had up yesterday, and I guess they have had up today.
One reason might be to protect them from the tools and the equipment, but the general public, but the other reason is they don't have to hear the opinions of the citizens walking by, who are all pretty much outraged.
And to show the citizens what's going on, because a lot of this, well, it isn't really necessary to shield the project. According to what I've heard, that, you know, in some places it was necessary, but the general shielding isn't required. Hey, we got another person here. Speak up, sir. What do you think of all this?
I think it's a colossal waste of money.
Oh, come on, man. It's this is your taxpayer dollars work. They're improving the quality of the mall. I mean, think of it this way. That old railing was so rusty they had to repair it. Oh, I mean, move it. I'm sorry. At a cost of $7,000. A slight slip of the tongue. Originally, that was how they bypassed the city council by saying, we are repairing the rust on the railing. But apparently they did a miracle job. They just sort of touched the railing and the rust vanished. That's really quite effective work by the city staff. I'm really impressed.
Words almost fail. Mean-spirited is the strongest thing I can think of. It's nasty, hateful, cowardly, and pitiful. It's a hell of a note on the whole city of Santa Cruz. If people, I hope it backfires on them, and I think it will, too.
I'm actually going to go up there and make a few public comments and get a few opinions before I hustle to my show, which will be played
on the radio.
What's that?
Did you see them move the railing on the things down there?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah, down in front of Pacific Trading Company, they where the concrete flat area is where people can sit down, they're moving the railings out so nobody can sit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's all for your own good. I think you could trip and fall. If you sat there,
she's visiting from Capitola.
Oh, well, all right. There you have it. Talking to a former voting inspector, 18 years a voting inspector, and now no longer. Why is that?
There were differences of opinion in the way in which the precinct workers, who I greatly respect, and I, as a longtime inspector, needed to run the precinct, especially during, just before and during closing.
And you're being very very diplomatic in your language. Would the ordinary person be concerned enough to resign, you think, as you would? Do you think that there is a problem that needs to be dealt with, or just a disagreement?
I would say there's a disagreement at this time because they have few people